a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Sound like John Bacon right now.
BC, how you doing, man? You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
How about those seven guys Michigan is looking at an Ole Miss's roster?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they're looking at three of them, but...
that was a joke. Michigan's okay. Not looking at seven guys. But can I... Let's be clear. They are not going after, not showing interest in seven guys on Ole Miss's roster.
Well, I mean, Michigan was already probably going to have to lose a couple of potential fifth-year seniors to get to 20 to 22 in this class. So you add three Ole Miss guys, and this class gets pretty tight already. So it's unless Greg Little wants to come, and I'd take Greg Little with open arms, but it seems like that's not going to happen. I think the three guys who are supposed to be on campus this weekend are it.
Right.
Which isn't bad. Like,
it's more than not bad. It's pretty doggone good. I'm definitely interested in you guys' thoughts. On Shea Patterson in particular. Before we get to those comments, though, let's introduce the other member of the roundtable present today, the Hawaii dwelling for the winter, Craig Ross. Craig, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Ed Fang not in with us this morning, so we'll miss Ed. But so, guys, Shea Patterson, your thoughts on Shea from what you've seen?
Well, he's obviously a really talented guy. He played in the SEC as a true freshman, and then had his year cut short this year because of a PCL, either tear or sprain. I don't remember which one, but really athletic guy. Looks like kind of like Brandon Peters on the move. He might be a little bit more athletic. Whippy arm. A guy who obviously has produced at a pretty high level. I think Pro Football Focus had him the third best quarterback in the SEC this year. So that's a pretty good baseline for Harbaugh to improve from. But I wouldn't write off Brandon Peters either.
Absolutely not.
I mean,
I think so. You know, someone I put this on the board the other day. I think that Shea Patterson is a tremendous talent. Watched him in high school. I remember when I watched him. Not in an all-star game. I guess any game that IMG played in is like an all-star game, right?
Yeah.
But watching him there, I was like, man, this dude is like Johnny Manziel. And you watch him, you watch Baker Mayfield. Now, that's who he puts me in the mind of when I think about his high school self. So he is a tremendous talent. But there are some realizations that I think Michigan fans have to come to if and when Shea Patterson comes into the fold. And it's a totally different offense, Brian. It's a totally different offense. I mean, you aren't looking to the sideline for the checks anymore. You know, your reprogressions, you're taking snap under center. You're doing all of these things at a much greater clip. And maybe you aren't doing some of those things at all in his other offense. You got to do that now. You got to learn the playbook. You got to learn the players. Brandon Peters is going to have a very clear advantage in this race going in.
Yeah, and he's produced fairly well as a redshirt freshman this year. He's got the bowl game to whoop up on South Carolina. That's what's going to happen, at least on defense. I mean, the defense is going to kill that offense. And then he's got an opportunity to, like, get 20 or 25 throws in and say, yeah, I'm here. So I wouldn't necessarily think that this is a slam dunk. But, I mean, he's obviously a really talented guy. And Michigan only has two quarterbacks on the roster next year who aren't going to be true freshmen. So just from, I mean, we saw what happened this year, right?
Right.
You know, you gotta have more than just two guys. And I think this is a excellent move for Harbaugh. And there's like Ohio State beat writers and Michigan State people being like, oh, it shows where he's at in year three in the program. Like
you wouldn't take a shot at a five-star quarterback. That was the guy. Are you kidding me? Yeah. And you don't have any experience on you. You're trading one experienced guy for another. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, part of it is a hole that Michigan dug for itself because Jim Harbaugh is the kind of guy who refused to talk about the Michigan job until the regular season of the NFL was over.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he managed to get Zach Gentry in, and that apparently wasn't working out, and now he's a really good tight end. But he didn't have more than a couple weeks to try to take a swing at a quarterback in his first class. So, and then before that, it was like Malzone and then nobody and Morris. So you,
so he didn't step into Braxton Miller and Cardale Jones is what you're saying. That's what I, that's how I interpret
that's,
your commentary.
Yes. So, you know, it's one of those things that I think a lot of people saw coming to some extent and hoped that Harbaugh could rescue it. But then the injury issues this year kind of threw that out the window.
Craig Ross?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched quite a bit of tape of Shea Patterson this week for obvious reasons. And the I liked a lot of what I saw. He has a pretty good arm. The thing that you point out, Sam, is that he's very escapable. I'm not sure I put him in the Johnny Manziel mode. I was thinking saying Fran Tarkenton, but that really dates me again.
Nobody knows who that is.
Yeah, I know. So, but he is escapable. He reminds me a little bit of Jim Harbaugh, who was kind of an escapable guy and could throw the ball pretty well on the run. So I like the tape a whole lot. In the process, I also watched the kid out of, is he from DC? And I'm blocking on his name. That's committed in this class.
The wide receiver or the.
No, the quarterback.
Doyle.
Doyle. And I like him a whole lot. I think he's way, way undervalued. I'm not saying he's going to come in and play next year. That ain't happening. But he also has a lot of talent. So I like what they're doing in the quarterback position. I don't know if Shea Patterson is coming. But does it make a difference to you guys whether he's eligible this year? Or if he's got a city year, because I don't think that's clear yet at this point.
I know it's not, and you know I think
they must be really confident that they can play this year. Otherwise, I don't think Michigan would be a consideration.
I guess.
Well, that's my thinking. Well, does it make sense for him to sit? To sit a year, have McCaffrey and Peters fight it out this year, and then one of them emerges, and then what? So I don't know.
See, I'm told that there's confidence that he can gain immediate eligibility, but that he's willing to risk it. He's willing to risk. I believe that this is going to be over before he has before that's determined. And so if certainly if you want Michigan to be there, because if I'm Michigan, I'm gonna pretend, let's role play. I'm Jim Harbaugh, and you're Shea Patterson.
Okay.
Look, if I come after you, Shea. There's no dilly dallying. There's no recruiting process. There's no back and forth. If I offer you, are you coming? And that's it.
That's the
pitch. And then you decide. Okay, is that good for me? Am I okay with that?
Yeah.
And if I'm okay with that, then you make a decision before you have a clear answer on whether or not you're going to be eligible. Now, if you're Michigan. It makes sense because if there's even the slightest chance that this kid can be eligible next year, don't you have to take that shot?
Yeah, you do.
Got to take that shot.
I agree.
I mean, I'm actually more enthused about getting Van Jefferson in here because Van Jefferson was honorable mention all SEC as a true freshman, had some injury issues this year, and got a little bit lost in a really talented receiving core. But, you look at his tape, and he looks like the kind of outside receiver that Michigan dearly, dearly missed this year.
Yeah, and I thought that kid, I thought he was coming to Michigan.
I thought
he was coming to Michigan on signing day. I know that there were guys in Schneberger Hall that thought he was coming on signing day as well. Now, as we look back in retrospect, and, didn't happen. He wound up at Ole Miss, but, maybe that was just a pit stop on his way to Ann Arbor.
hopefully, because, that's a guy who, if he is immediately eligible, I think steps into the – well, Tariq Black will have his say, but he's obviously a guy who gives Michigan another bullet at a position that they need two or three guys to really step up at this year.
Maybe the most significant guy, and I feel really good about where Michigan is with Shea Patterson, as you know by my first crystal ball, and you know, word from his camp is things are looking good with Van Jefferson. Deontay Anderson is the guy that I don't have as much of a feel for as far as where Michigan stands, but he's the guy that could potentially be the biggest impact guy of the three next year if they were to get him.
I mean, I was pretty pleased with Michigan's safety play, especially considering those guys were first-time starters. But, I mean, obviously they had Jamarik Woods come in this year when either guy got pushed out, and that's like a true freshman, and you saw Kelly Powell play as more of a slot corner. So their depth there is pretty low. And Anderson is a guy who's a higher-rated recruit than anybody Michigan currently has at that spot. So he would push both those guys. And safety is a spot where you could see some rotation, too. So if Anderson is the kind of guy who can go and cover those slot fades, then he will win a job. I can promise you that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an interesting sort of path that we have seen Michigan go down. But this is a way to fortify your ranks really quick, fast, and in a hurry with some very, very talented guys. And, you know, three guys. I mean, Michigan recruited Deontay Anderson out of high school. Didn't get, you know,
a huge time of day.
Right. But they recruited him. So, you know, we'll see. But he would be a huge, huge addition to the mix for the Maize and Blue. So you bowl opponent. Let's touch on this real quick. First of all, guys, was it as much of a slight to the Spartans as they're taking it to be?
It blows my mind that anyone cares about this crap. Like, there's all these, like, there's a Michigan State beat writer who's like, Spartans, if you're angry about the bowl thing, email me. And I'm like, really? Is that? Who cares? And
they would have put the Outback in Lansing out of business, man. Because they would have boycotted.
Yeah.
They would have, and the only one that's really affected is the one in Lansing. Like, they're Spartans. They can't get 70,000 people in the stadium, so they're going to be Spartans all over the country. They're going to put Outback out of business. Give me a break.
Can you imagine the guy who, like, manages the Outback in East Lansing being like, oh no. Man. What? I've been with this company for 10 years, and now we're out of business because people are mad that some non-New Year's Six bowl picked some other team.
Yeah, but we all know that it's really simple. Unless you're a bra that's 20 or 30 or a wannabe 20 or 30-year-old bra, you're going to – and Outback's in your restaurant rotation, you're going to still go. The only guys or gals that are gonna actually boycott Outback anywhere might be in East Lansing, and it's because they're 20-something years old and they're bros. And that's just, you know, that's just their attitude. Otherwise, Outback is not going to take a hit. Because those people are frauds anyway. Not the Outback people, the fans that are saying they're going to boycott.
Yeah, and like, no, I'm Michigan State. Like, I'm going to San Diego. I'm playing Washington State. That seems like a fun matchup. Although with, you know.
If I'm Michigan State, I'm thinking, I didn't expect to be in a bowl game this year. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Well, no,
We beat Michigan and we made a bowl. I mean, hell, man. Yeah. You know, this is be satisfied. Who thought, if you're a Michigan, what Michigan State fan in his right mind thought they would be in that position after, you know, if you rewind the tape to a year ago at this time?
In his right mind is kind of a big qualifier.
Right, I gotcha. What do you think of the matchup, Craig, South Carolina?
I mean, I think Michigan needs a win at this point in time, and I think South Carolina is a team Michigan can beat. Beyond that, I don't know a whole lot about them. I don't think they had any sort of a phenomenal season or anything like that. I think they've got gaps and holes in that team. You know, we probably do too, but I haven't paid a lot of attention to South Carolina this year, but I think it's from what I've seen and their outcomes, I think it's a team we can beat. And I think that's something we need, more than anything else. I don't know. Have you looked at South Carolina yet, Brian?
I haven't scouted them, but I have looked at their season. Yeah. And they played two elite defenses in Georgia and I think Auburn. So those are two top 10-ish defenses. They failed to get 300 yards against either of those teams. They scored 10 points in both those games. They lost to Kentucky 23-13. They barely beat Tennessee. S&P Plus, my favorite ranking system, thinks they're the 67th best team in the country. Favors Michigan by more than a touchdown. the early Vegas line that was like South Carolina by 9. I was like, that has to be a typo, and it was a typo.
It was, yeah.
Because
it was backwards.
S&P thinks that South Carolina is one of the worst bowl eligible teams, despite the fact they're 8-4. Their offense is terrible, and they fired their offensive coordinator. They're a very dink and dunk passing focused offense. They don't really run the ball very much at all. So it's going to be one of those games where I think Michigan's defense dominates the whole time. You know, they get one drive in, they get their 10 points, and then it's all about whether Michigan can get to 11. Mm-hmm. I think they can.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a very winnable game from what I know at this point. And I think for Michigan, maybe that's more important than anything. You know, the two footnotes on football, to me, the positive and the negative. One is that I saw yesterday or the day before that 48 Michigan kids were academic all Big Ten, which I'm pretty sure is better than anybody else in the conference. And the other thing I saw, the negative or the hilarious, is Herm Edwards' press conference at Arizona State, where he, I mean, I've always felt Herm was particularly incoherent, but
the exchange with the guy from the Devil's Digest?
Yes.
Hilarious.
What are they doing?
But he doesn't look.
Wait a minute! I didn't see.
You didn't catch this.
I didn't see the Devil's Digest.
Oh my god!
Oh goodness! So basically,
I got to see it in a break.
Yeah. So basically, though, for those who haven't seen her, basically what happened is the guy, you know, go to a room. So I'm Ira from WTK, and the guy goes, "So and so from Devil's Digest." He goes, "Devils! I'm a Christian. I'm a Catholic. We don't like the devil."
Are you kidding?
And there's like pitchforks behind him on the screen.
Yeah, on the screen. And
what then, the hell is he talking
about? It goes
on
for like 30 seconds more, but that's basically
he doesn't know what Arizona State's mascot is.
It may be the greatest press conference moment of all time for a new head coach. Without question.
What is Herm doing? I like Herm Edwards. I've interviewed Herm Edwards. I've broken bread with Herm Edwards, man. I sat down for 20 minutes with Herm Edwards about Jabril Peppers. And he gave me some great stuff.
Yeah, he
Herm, man.
He doesn't know what's going on.
Clearly. We don't like devils. So you're going to chat.
You're at the wrong school.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Phone lines are open at 734-998-1050 for you to get in on the MGO Blog Roundtable. So Don and Arbor will get to you on the other side. But they're also open for Magic of Christmas calls. If you want to adopt a wish list, we still have wish lists available. Please help out giving us a call at 734-998-1050 so we can bring Christmas to the kids in Washtenaw County that otherwise wouldn't have it. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket. I think I'm going to have an absolute blast looking at this video of Herm Edwards talk about not liking devils as the head coach of the Sun.
Yes, savor it.
That makes a lot of sense.
I can never watch it for the first time again, but that is in your future.
So this is a guy who really doesn't know the team mascot.
He probably knows now. I assume someone told him after the press conference, like, hey, you should know something.
Good grief. All right, let's go to the phones at 734-998-1050 and talk to Don in Ann Arbor. Don, what's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question about Michigan's offense. But first on Herm Edwards, it's just a simple mistake. He confused Tempe with Tucson. He thought he was replacing Rich Rodriguez. So.
Maybe so.
On Michigan's offense, one of the bits of conventional wisdom that I hear on the radio here and CNN go blog all the time is that Michigan's offense under Harbaugh is much more complex, much more NFL-like than other offenses on other teams, and that's why it takes longer, some people say, for our quarterbacks to learn the system, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll admit, to my untutored eye, Michigan's offense looks comparatively vanilla and simple, especially in comparison to offenses like Auburn's, which looks, at least in terms of its, you know, the amount of pre-snap movement, ball handlings, misdirection, looks every bit as complicated as Michigan's offense. What is it about Michigan's offense that makes it so much more complicated than other offenses? Can you guys explain it to me?
Well, Auburn is a really interesting case because they're – whole thing is they have a wing T system they've adapted for college. And so to make that work, you get all the screens, you get all the motion pre-snap, but it's they have a kind of a simple base system that they wrap in a ton of frippery. So it's one of those things that looks complicated to both the average viewer and the opposition defense, but actually has a fairly simple core for the offense itself. And I think Michigan is kind of in that vein as well. You know, there was some quote from D'Antonio after the Michigan State game about how they had like some 40 formations, and people kind of took that as like a jab, which is, it wasn't a jab at all, because that was what D'Antonio did last year. He had that first drive where they'd been preparing it for probably 2 months, where they had a bunch of different formations that they were motioning to and from and trying to get Michigan out of alignment when it worked, and they went down and scored a touchdown immediately. So that was something that took a lot of preparation time and maybe prevented them from having a better offense the rest of the year. So there are sacrifices when you do these things, but Michigan definitely chooses complicated play calls and formations and variation over a relatively simple offense like Indiana, which is more focused on getting to the line of scrimmage and going real fast. So it's a philosophical thing, but I don't think that Ohio State's offense is simple. I think Ohio State's offense is very difficult. I think Georgia Tech's offense is very difficult, despite it looking very simple. So you only have a limited amount of time that you can coach these kids up, and every offense is using all of that time. And that time gets spent at Michigan on different formations, and at Ohio State, it gets spent on quarterback reads. It gets spent on being able to vary your tempo. And how well either of those approaches work depends on your personnel, depends on your coaching. So I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong answer in terms of, like, we have a simple, fast offense and we have a complicated, slow offense.
Yeah, and it's more complicated compared to the average spread read option offense, where you're reading the court, you're not blocking one guy, and the quarterback is reading that guy. It could be the backside end, it could be, you know, what Brian calls inverted veer on the front side. I mean, those offenses, I think, are relatively more simple. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think so, than what Harbaugh's doing, which is running gaps and powers and counters. Plus, it's a I assume it's a more difficult reads for the quarterback in the passing tree. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No. So my guess is that Harbaugh is running a somewhat more complicated offense than, say, Rich Rod is. But I don't know how much meaning there is in saying one is more complicated than the other.
Well, one thing that kind of leapt out at me when I was charting Rich Rod's offense is that there were constant tweaks. So when people started shuffling down the line, there was a point in time where Michigan had a particular play call that would block that guy and send the running back just inside the crease that guy was leaving. So he was constantly figuring out what people were doing to his offense and adjusting to make that a wrong answer again. And then there's a game of cat and mouse that was being played. And Michigan's offense is a little bit less susceptible to that because you've got more blockers in the area. You have more little variations you can have with the run game. So there's not like a simple answer to what Michigan does when they have 22 personnel out there. You know, the trade-off there is that there are more blocks to screw up. And usually if you screw up one block, you've screwed up the play. So with Michigan, I think they need to get better. And I think that's the main thing. I don't think the style of offense is their problem. I think it's the fact that they couldn't find a right tackle this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd all agree with that. But we were Michigan's problems on offense were was not the structure of the offense, but it was the execution and quarterback play and offensive line play, and to some extent wide receiver play, everything.
Yeah.
So you guys, you said Michigan couldn't find a right tackle. Can Michigan find a point guard?
I think they can try, and that's just go with Brooks. Ace had a really good post on our site, you know, talking about like the breakdown in points per position for and against with various point guards on the floor. And the offense just curls up and dies when Xavier Simpson's on the floor. And he was only looking at the non-body bag games Michigan's played so far. So the sample size is still pretty low. It's under 200 possessions, but the gap there is really, really big. And I can't help but correlate the, 19 points in the second half against Ohio State with the fact that Xavier Simpson was out there and Brooks was not.
What do you think, and something that we've tossed around here on the show and over on the MichiganInsider.com, what do you think about Muhammad?
As a point guard?
At the one.
He's just not ball dominant enough. Like, he's a good guy to get to, like, late in the shot clock. Hasn't really been an assist guy most of his career, and that's kind of asking a lot for him. And then, like, who's your two guard?
Poole. Well, Jordan Poole.
Hey, man, you want to put Jordan Poole out there for 30 minutes a game? I'm listening. Like, I couldn't believe he got 9 against Ohio. I'm like, what's going on? Come on.
Well, we talked to B-Line this morning. He said, look, defense.
Defense?
He said defense. He said defense determines whether or not, it's determining who plays.
I mean, he probably has some defensive problems. I'll allow that. But so do other people who are getting 30 minutes a game.
I knew that's where you were going.
I'm just saying.
I hear you. Look, this is the thing that I think is going to – I think the fourth spot is going to evolve. I think that they have to get comfortable with Isaiah Livers knowing his assignments on both ends. And then can he show also that he'll never be Duncan as a shooter. But can he show that you at least have to respect him? Can will the floor stay spaced with him out there? And once he does those things at a competent level, I think he'll be the guy. I mean, how could he not be? Because he gives you more on the glass. He gives you more defensively. He gives you more finishing at the rim.
What I would do is I would go to the Novak route, except Charles Matthews is not Zach Novak. But I put him at the four. I'd find out three guys that I can play 1 through 3, and I'd probably prefer Mar, Brooks, and Jordan Poole, and then have Duncan as that, 20 to 25-minute off-the-bench guy. But, yeah, I would put Charles Matthews at the four at this point. He's athletic enough to...
So right now, that's
right
what
now.
You do.
That's, yeah.
I could go for that. I could go for him doing that right now, but eventually, man, I would make Isaiah Livers my... I mean, assuming that he grows.
I mean, if he can grow into the role, yeah, but, Matthews is a great rebounder right now. The three and the four aren't hardly different at all in the offense, so I don't think it really impacts his offensive role, but yeah, I think he's a better defensive player than Duncan at the four.
Oh, there's no question.
And Duncan's offense is really scuffling because he's exerting so much effort as a defender.
Well, teams are – it's like the Oregon game. I told Ira this the other day. We were in St. Louis, and it was – I mean, you could see them on the bench.
That guy, yeah.
That guy.
Yeah.
And they were going after him, and so this Ohio State was doing the same thing.
Yeah, and if you put him back on the bench and he's coming out when Ohio State is rotating – there's usually going to be their sixth or seventh or eighth guy who he can match up with and not get totally dunked on all day. That's what I would do.
Interesting stuff.
I think it's interesting that we're talking about defense when this team has played some elegant basketball this year, even in Maui when I was watching them. The LSU loss looks bad in some sense, but that was a really fluky, weird game where LSU threw up about, I would say, a dozen bricks that ended up bouncing around off those rims.
Yeah, those
and
rims.
Rolled in. I mean, and so that wasn't as bad a loss as it looked like, that two-point loss. And we played very elegant and good basketball, I thought, against Indiana. And in the first half against Ohio State, we're up by 20 points. And the reason we lose that game, I mean, I'm sure there are defensive problems. So we lost that game on offense. We're up 43-23, and we score 18 points the rest of the game. And I think that comprised of four baskets. And in the second half, Duncan, Matthews, Mo, and Muhammad went 0 for 19 from the floor with 9 missed looks at the rim until Matthews scores an uncontested dunk at the end of the game. So this is, to me, is more of a shooting problem. And if you look at the shooting numbers for Michigan this year, they're terrible. This is just not a good shooting team so far. I mean, we're terrible. We're 65-66% at the free throw line. That's awful. I think it's 286 in the country. We're terrible from the three. We're shooting 32.5%, which is bad. I mean, what the team is doing well is they're not turning it over. They're in the top 10 there. And they're also holding their own on the boards, which is unusual for a Beeline team. So in the Ohio State game, we actually, I think, had 14 or 15 more, 59-45 was the shot. And yet we still just couldn't win the game because we can't put the ball in the basket. I mean, go ahead.
Your point is an apt one when you talk about, you know, you're up by 20. I don't care. I mean, your defense, even if your defense is poor, so what? You know, make some shots, you still win the game, and they couldn't make any shots.
If you shoot 25 or 30% after being up by 20, and that isn't a high bar, you waltz home in that game.
Well, I just don't think that a Beeline offense can carry a guy who doesn't shoot at the point guard position, doesn't shoot at all.
I hear what you're saying about the line. I mean, first of all, what I'm always going to tell you is shorten the bench. Make your choices, shorten your bench. I mean, allow people to relax on the court. The more there is a turnstile in your offense, the less that's going
to
happen.
And you hit it with Beeline. We got to get to a break, Craig, and I'll let you finish your thought on the other side. But he said, you know, it's hard to play 3-point guards. Who gets in the flow? So he kind of spoke to what Craig is talking about right there. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side, get to more of your phone calls, emails, and tweets, and close things out here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. Go to the phones real quick. Talk to Eric in South Carolina. Eric, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Nothing much.
What I figured out about Duncan Robinson, man, whenever somebody plays physical with him, you're not getting a whole lot of offense out of him anyway. So you might want to go ahead and go to Middleton, because at least he's going to give you some defense. Like, Duncan Robinson was, I don't want to say useless, but he was non-existent on defense in that last game. And I still say it. I've been hammering this point home for about 6 years. We have to get us a physical, athletic center that's an intimidator in the middle, because our guys can play adequate defense, but there's nobody on Michigan's team that's deterring teams or scaring teams from going in the paint and score. You know, Jason Tate put on a clinic. And I'm not discrediting him and saying that Mo should have just been able to stop him. But we need somebody that's going to get physical back with people that's physical with us. That's all I got, fellas. Y'all have a good one, man. Go Blue.
Thanks a lot for the call there. What did you guys think of, real quick, the shot fired back across the bow by Jim Harbaugh?
I mean, it's off-season Harbaugh. Let's get after it. No slacking.
I was kind of a little off guard by that one.
I mean, yeah, but usually it takes a little bit of time, but, like, he must have been a little bit cheesed off by D'Antonio's little press conference thing. I like it spicy, so let's keep it up.
What did you think, Craig?
I don't know. Is Harbaugh really using run-on sentences? Is that what D'Antonio was complaining about? I find D'Antonio to be a pinhead. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's a small-minded, grouchy, you know, he's a great coach. I mean, I don't want to say anything.
But he's a pinhead. You just got an invitation to the Shebeckler Hall there, Craig Ross. All right, that'll do it for this week's show. Thanks for listening.